Welcome to the Daily Wrap-Up, a concise show dedicated to bringing you the most relevant independent news as we see it from the last 24 hours.
So I'd like to begin today by pointing something out that I found to be very revealing, maybe something that may not stand out to the average mainstream media viewer today because it's what they've become slowly accustomed to, but there's a very interesting thing I realized when I was going through some of these mainstream channels and looking where their coverage is at. It's almost like these mainstream media channels are not here to report the news. Well, one part of which would no doubt be the midterms, but it's a consuming part today, but only a part, but are actually, or in actuality, are here to sell you with all-encompassing, basically ceaseless coverage on their political leaning and the inherent danger, mind you, of voting any other way. When did this become so blatant? Many of us have been paying attention. But when did this become so blatant? Not so long ago, these channels still feigned impartiality. Now they no longer even keep up appearances. Each mainstream media channel is 100% in the bag for one side of the two-party deception. How is that not alarming? How is that not suspect for those still caught up in the mainstream media news cycle? Not just that they're only covering the midterms extensively. All the other important things going on in the world just take a back seat to this broken ritual that we're participating in, but the fact that each one of these channels is aggressively selling the idea of voting for one side of the party. What happened to impartiality? They don't even pretend anymore. That should be alarming to us, that everything they're doing, entire day's worth of coverage, as well as leading up to this, has been aggressively trying to sell you on how important it is to vote this time, more than every other time before, but this time to vote. Get out there and vote, but vote this way, because anything else is a waste of your vote. It's an absurd ritual and routine that we go through with all of this. And I just wanted to point that out, that the obsessive one-sided nature of mainstream media today is what they used to pretend was absolutely the opposite of what their job was. Impartial. We give you impartially the news without any political leaning, and now that's not even part of what they pretend for. I find that to be pretty amazing, but most of you probably are aware of this. One thing I want to touch on first was an excerpt from something Caitlin Johnstone wrote. Actually, this was the title used by Anti-Media when they reposted it because I like the title better. Why Professional Wrestling is the Perfect Metaphor for U.S. Politics. Now, both mainstream parties are controlled by plutocrats who benefit from the status quo and are only interested in their own power and profit. No matter who wins on Tuesday, today, that would be, the wars are guaranteed to continue. The oligarchs are guaranteed to keep siphoning more and more money out of the pockets of ordinary Americans. Opaque and unaccountable intelligence agencies are guaranteed to continue expanding intrusive surveillance practices and narrative control psyops in collaboration with powerful Silicon Valley corporations. And we're guaranteed to keep hurtling toward climate catastrophe on the back of an economic system which requires infinite growth on a finite planet. And I think that's very well put. The point being is that the same thing, that's drilling the same point down, and it blows me away that people can't wrap their mind around how this really, the very clear example of this through decades of American U.S. politics, the same things have continued forward. We put up a very similar style of article years back, I think in 2016, entitled Counterfeit Reality, the Media-Controlled American Illusion, which was the same general concept in this article. The clear comparison to, you know, fake wrestling, WWF wrestling, and the way politics are carried out. I recommend you read both of these articles. Very well done. But as we wrote in this article, it really isn't some vaguely defined them who has undercut reality. It's us, Americans. The problem is caused by our eagerness to purchase, consume, and wallow in counterfeit reality. The underlying cause of the preponderance of counterfeit reality is our reluctance to undertake the difficult task of understanding complex reality. We demand simplicity. And reality is seldom able to fill that order. The whole truth is seldom simple and never easy. During the discipline of a previous culture, the Roman Emperor Nero supposedly fiddled during the decline, I'm reading off this last article. This was written by Verlin Gates, by the way. He used to write for The Last American Vagabond. He writes, during the decline of a, which makes it much different, a decline of a previous culture, the Roman Emperor Nero supposedly fiddled while the city burned down around him so that he could deny the reality of the disaster. During a real fire, there are no medals reserved for those who successfully deny the need to put the fire out. The real heroes are those who acknowledge, confront, and help extinguish the flames. Now, you could read that and kind of bend it into however you see the world, which most people do, but the reality is there's a very, very obvious problem in our system, and instead of trying to stand back and acknowledge there's a problem and fix the problem, we just drill down and do the same thing over and over in hopes that that one new person can save everything. There's a problem there. And hopefully it's something that people are beginning to recognize, that there's an inherent issue with ignoring the intrinsic problems in our situation today. The same things happen. The same people do the same things. The same problems continue. And yet we still feel, we're still driven by this aggressive propaganda that we have to get out because if you don't, you're wasting everything and you got to do it now or you're going to lose your chance. It's just this aggressive, in-your-face push by all the mainstream channels. Nathan did some good coverage today. I was amazed at some of the things I saw from some of these main, even alternative people really pushing that just to not go out and make an educated vote, but to go out and make a blanket vote for only one side because you have to. All Republican or all Democrat. Not think for yourself. Not research each person and based on their merits vote one way or the other. No, just vote blindly one way or the other. And this is logic today? This is what people buy? And it blows me away that there are people out there, but I truly think that it is a small minority of the average American populace. And that you're being sold a lie by the mainstream media. As we know, it's what they do. So bearing that in mind, I have a couple of quick articles or stories from today that relate to this topic, and then let's get into some of the things that are being ignored due to the frenzy over the midterms of a broken system. The first one related to the voting issue, this carrying on from my longer episode yesterday that I recommend you watch. I'm not trying to sell anybody on just simply not voting. I'm trying to let you know why that's how I see it. I support anyone that wants to go out and vote if you truly believe you can make a difference. I recommend voting local. Makes much more of a difference in the system that may not be completely gone. But I think with all the stuff that we have in front of us, it seems quite obvious the system is broken to the point to where simply checking a box is not going to make much of a difference. My yesterday show was about why I think our vote no longer matters. I recommend you check it out. I'll put it in the show notes. The first story from Zero Hedge, MSNBC mistakenly shows results of Florida governor race one day early. This is nothing new. This happens almost every time. Now, truly, I don't think this is them going, whoops, we accidentally showed you that we already know who's going to win, which is how people try to sell this. And it's not the case. And it could be. It could just be that they're that bad at their job. They're that incompetent that they slip, kind of like the old Building 7 9/11 scenario where they go, yeah, this building's down and it's right behind their shoulder. I think this is more of them trying to sway the election, trying to manipulate your perception and go, oh, well, look, this guy's already winning, so we might as well vote for him. So not to waste our vote. And they do this every time. And they claim, oh, well, we make a lot of different graphics for all kinds of different scenarios. So just in case, which is kind of ridiculous. You're telling me they make a different graphic for every point percentile and just have them ready? That's absurd. This was done with intent to manipulate your perception. And this is just one aspect of many different things that happen. They wrote, quick clarification here. Just want to say earlier this hour, we showed a graphic of the Florida gubernatorial race, which I mispronounced yesterday. Someone pointed out to me. I'd never even heard that word before yesterday. Apparently it means a governor race. I thought it said gubernational, but it's just a weird word. Either way, gubernatorial race may have caught your eye because our system had inadvertently populated some test numbers. Whoops, our system just kind of popped this out. Without the people back there controlling, no, this was a complete fluke that happens every year. It's patently ridiculous the things that people still buy from these obvious career liars. He goes on to say, obviously, we do not yet have the vote totals here. The night before the election, this was a misfire. Don't worry, I was pretty confused when I saw it up there to see it there myself, but didn't point it out until after the fact. Apparently, he was real confused. But the reality here is this was put in your face the day before, and all the people that saw it up until now when they pointed out that it was a mistake have likely swayed their vote one way or another. And that's the point. Of course, the numbers having a Democrat win, because that's where they lean on this channel. one small facet of a wildly corrupt, easily demonstrable broken system. Now, the next story, one that's not as damning, but interesting nonetheless, entitled Chaos at Polls as Voting Machines Malfunction. Frustrating delays plague midterms. Now, just pointing out, there's a lot to be suspect about with these machines. All the things we pointed out yesterday, which I'll end with a clip of today, of Clint Curtis testifying in front of the Supreme Court that he was paid to manipulate the elections with source code in these machines so they could flip the votes one way or the other. That's fact. Many people still don't even realize that's a real story. It was proven true. He testified in front of the Supreme Court that said, yes, they paid me to flip the election. And nothing ever happened. They used the same machines the next year. So knowing that these things are happening with things like we're talking about in this article today, we should be suspect that there's many reasons that these things have problems. Now, in Richland County, South Carolina, a calibration issue with, quote, aging touchscreen machines has resulted in mismarked ballots. Oops, mismarked the wrong one. Now, even if that was just a general mistake, the fact that it's so prevalent that we're using these old machines that have been proven to be manipulatable, and they're just having fluke errors, I mean, Christ, what else do we need to see to show us this system is hanging on by a thread? Maybe because they want it that way. They go on to say, if the calibration slips, you can touch it, but the screen will either select above or below because of the calibration issue. I wonder if that just simply means there's a person they don't want them to vote for. Who knows? Who knows? But these are questions we should be asking. Others in South Carolina precincts have reported voting machine issues and are now handing out paper ballots to voters, which I think that's great. You know, it's one way that you can avoid this, but it's not going to happen everywhere. Now, in Florida, where Democratic Tallahassee Mayor Andrew Gillum recently led Republican Ron DeSantis by 7 points, one woman reported long lines caused by more than half of the voting machines going down. Now, also consider whether this is a ploy to slow down the voting while they feel that they're in the lead. I mean, these are just things that happen. People are will deceive the process if they feel they're doing it for a righteous reason or just because they want to deceive and they're immoral. But it happens. Now, the same was reported in Houston and Texas and many other stations all over the place. This is coming out. We're having no shortage of the same kind of manipulations popping up. Now, it's just important for us to recognize these things. Now, I'm going to move on to some of the bigger stories that I think are much more important than all of this ins and outs of the broken system that we're trying to participate in. But it's important for us to recognize that the system, not just that I want you to see what I see, but it's okay to ask the very basic question, is the system broken? Does my vote actually go for what I think it does? That's a very valid question with all of the things I pointed out in my show and any of the many number of things that we see on a regular basis from these corrupt politicians. But they don't want you to think that. They don't want you to ask any questions. That should be a red flag in and of itself. Now, one of the big stories today that's getting completely ignored, which it probably would have anyway, they probably would have found a different distraction, but that distraction is today, the midterms, entitled, U.S. uses banned white phosphorus bombs in Syrian city for the fourth time in 2 months. The fourth time. That is an illegal chemical weapon under the Chemical Weapons Convention. And they continue to use it. And no one does anything about it. And civilians die. Nothing new. But it's getting covered up. Yet again. Now, the U.S.-led coalition in Syria has been accused of using white phosphorus incendiary munitions for the fourth time since mid-September. White phosphorus is banned internationally when used in areas with civilian populations, which every one of these times has been. So, and I'll get into their claims. This is the immediate thing that pops into the minds of people who try to argue this. Oh, well, it's used for signaling, but if it's ever used in a civilian population area, it's a war crime. This is what everyone has agreed to, except for the United States, which I'll get into in a moment. But the point being that this is a internationally regarded war crime if in civilian populations, which it is. So there's no denying that. Syrian state news agency Sana reported on a bombing conducted by the U.S.-led coalition that had targeted the small city of Hajin in Syria's eastern Deir ez-Zor province over the weekend. The bombing, allegedly intended to target ISIS terrorists who control the city, as they claim, of course, usually, despite the fact that they're funding and protecting and arming and everything else, the same group they pretend to be fighting, it killed, in fact, 15 civilians, proving that this is a civilian area that they're bombing, among women and other children, and injured scores more. Now, just in case you wanted some other alternate verification of this, it did in fact happen. U.S. Coalition kills 14 in this coverage in this area. Now, Mint Press is breaking the concept of the white phosphorus. It doesn't discuss it here, but the point is that these civilians died due to a U.S.-led coalition airstrike. That used to be news, but now it's not. Oh, well, some people died. Isn't there a war going on? But just forget about it. These are innocent people that die in Syria, continuing to happen. In Syria, this place, like, while these other stages of war escalate, we still have old places like Iraq and Afghanistan and Syria just carrying on. I guess Syria is not necessarily that old, but in general, all of these stages of war where people continue to die, whole families of civilian individuals completely, it's actually upsetting and staggering to me that the average American doesn't feel this is a bigger deal. It used to be a war crime to kill civilians, but now it's okay if you just claim you're aiming for somebody else. It's quite amazing to me. Now, civil sources cited by Sana reported that the white phosphorus bombs had been used, which in addition to resulting in several civilian deaths, as we pointed out, and injuries, caused massive property damage due to the fires resulting from the use of the banned substance. Remember, if being all analogous liquids, I believe, if I'm mispronouncing that, materials or devices is listed in the statute of the International Criminal Court as a war crime, end quote. As a result of the extreme damage it can cause, Protocol 3 of the 1980 Convention on Conventional Weapons prohibits the use of this chemical weapon in areas populated by civilians. However, guess who didn't sign the Protocol 3? The United States. The United States is not a signatory of the Protocol 3, while they still would enforce this on anybody else. How does that work out? Now, the recent alleged bombing of a Syrian town with white phosphorus by munitions is the fourth time, mind you, as we pointed out, that the U.S.-led coalition has been accused and verified, at least three that I can think off the top of my head, as using this banned substance in this village of Hajin since September. Just since September. As usual, the U.S. claims that they used white phosphorus in, quote, accordance with the law of armed conflict, and that the munitions were only used for screening, obscuring, and marking in a way that fully considers the possible incidental effects on civilians and civilian structures. Which is just such a political doublespeak nonsense when you're firing it over civilian homes and killing civilians. This is their blanket reflexive statement. When they get caught for using white phosphorus. Well, we're using it for signaling and whatnot. And everyone, okay. Well, then you're good. Except that they killed 15 civilians and burned down a bunch of civilian homes, which by default makes it a civilian area. It's not that complicated. But this is how they get people talking in circles. They give the other side a talking point to be able to combat, well, the fake news. But the reality is they're killing civilians with chemical weapons, the same reason they're trying to attack Syria, they claim, which we know is a bunch of BS today. Now, unfortunately, the U.S.-led coalition has been using white phosphorus in combat operations for long since before September. In fact, the use of white phosphorus has become so commonplace that a New Zealand general that worked with the coalition has openly admitted to its use in Iraq's Mosul in an interview with NPR, of all people. The coalition also used the banned munitions in its effort to take the Syrian city of Raqqa from ISIS in June of last year. Now, this is a general admitting that they used this not for signaling, but to attack people. That is a war crime. And yet we have this man admitting this on NPR and nothing happens. If that doesn't show you a control structure in place, I don't know what does. If anyone from any one of the U.S. Named enemies had anyone admit this kind of thing on a national radio station, that would be used against them. But not with Israel, not with the United States, not with Saudi Arabia. Of course not. Thousands of civilians died in the coalition efforts to retake Raqqa, where they used white phosphorus, which also destroyed an estimated 90% of the buildings in the city. This past June, incidentally, Amnesty International accused the U.S. coalition of war crimes in that offensive. This is nothing new. This has been going on for a long time. The only real question is why our impartial media doesn't cover this, and two, why they're never held accountable for obvious, verifiable, demonstrable war crimes and crimes against humanity. It's a good question. I doubt it will ever be asked by the people incessantly covering the midterms today. Moving on to the next article coming from mintpressnews.com. This one is sadly about Yemen, as it has been, but the real point to take away from this and what we're about to talk about is the absurd, insulting discussion about peace talks and ceasefires while the U.S., who's on the ground, involved in these very agendas and efforts taking place today, knew this was going to happen and did it anyway and pretended to talk about ceasefires. This entitled, Yemen's civilians face hell as Saudis launch last-ditch effort to build leverage for looming talks, which arguably will never happen as they haven't in the past, at least not with any real effect. And as Hussein al-Bukhadi pointed out, without fail, every time the U.S. brings up the idea of ceasefires and talks, Saudis use that as cover to carry out a major offensive, which is what they're doing at this moment. And the point being, the U.S. is well aware of what they're striking, how they're striking it, and when they plan to strike it, as we've as the Associated Press has verified. And yet they pretend to talk about ceasefires and talks, likely for the midterms. That's likely what it was all about. Now, the Saudi-led coalition, directly and intricately supported by the United States, renewed its large-scale offensive on Western Hodeidah, accompanied by heavy bombing runs on the many residential areas surrounding the home. The new offensive has thrown the port city, Hodeidah, which we've pointed out many times, is a very geostrategic point, which is one of many reasons why they're aiming for that specifically. And also the port that's being used to cut off the vast majority of their food, which is why they're all starving to death. It's thrown this port city, already suffering from an unprecedented humanitarian crisis, both with famine and cholera, into absolute despair. So far, the violence, which erupted just hours after the U.S. called for a renewed effort to restart Yemen's peace talks, of course, pointing out, as always, that's how it works, the Maxdin district, which Hussein al-Bukhadi has reported on a lot. Over the weekend, over 200 coalition airstrikes using 500-pound guided bombs targeted families seeking shelter in attics near the university and the airport. Civilian areas. We can no longer just kind of casually assume that they made a mistake or aimed at the wrong area, or the Houthis were using this area and they just bombed them in. These are civilian areas, demonstrably so before and after, and they're bombing them for that reason. That's why they're bombing them. And the U.S. are the ones putting their finger on a map. 50th Street and the Kilo 16 district, home to the main highway linking Hodeidah and Sana'a, less than 5 kilometers from the city's busy fish market, which we recently reported on them bombing as well, not accidentally, but bombing the civilians at the fish market. They have seen some of the worst destruction since the beginning of this war. Before the assault on Hodeidah began, the coalition sent more than 10,000 fighters to the city's outskirts. And guess what? After they declared peace talks and ceasefires, on Thursday, the U.S.-backed coalition deployed another 30,000 fighters near the city's eastern entrance. So let that sink in. The U.S.-backed coalition, intricately involved in all decisions that are made, sent 10,000 fighters, then decided to say, we're talking about peace talks and ceasefires. And then days later, sent 30,000 more troops. That doesn't sound like ceasefire or peace talks to me. Sounds like the U.S. knowingly lied to the people, the press, the world, so they could carry out a massive offensive on the groups that they're losing to at this moment. Well, I shouldn't say losing to, that they're not completely overtaking at this moment. That is upsetting. That shows you the real nature of the people that you're out there voting for, as they knowingly commit mass genocide for political purposes. Thank you, M99, for your super chat. Here are some bloody petrodollars to celebrate my abstinence from this farce. I appreciate your support. Thank you so much. I struggled with this point because this is so blatant. If there were real journalists anywhere in the mainstream media, this would be a massive point. So, Mattis, you stood up and called for peace talks and ceasefires, and then days later sent 30,000 more troops? How do you explain that? They would never ask that question. Now, local reports indicate that some of the fighters are from local al-Qaeda and ISIS affiliates, as well as Sudanese mercenaries equipped with tanks and other military vehicles. So yet again, the United States directly supporting al-Qaeda and ISIS affiliates. This stuff, it doesn't get old. It's astounding to me. The very clear connection. These are the people the U.S. coalition is supporting. The very al-Qaeda group they claim is responsible for 9/11. As they mourned on 9/11 for, fighting the real enemy, and then they help them in Yemen, work alongside them in Yemen and in Syria. It's just, it can't get much more obvious than this. And again, these are the people that people want you to vote for today. They say, quote, over the past few days, I and others around the world have paid close attention to U.S.-led efforts to stop the war against Yemen. But after 3 days of calling for peace have passed, few people seem interested in peace. We see nothing but more escalations on all fronts. This from a Hodeida resident speaking to Mint Press News. This is the reality of the situation. You are being led by the nose by deceptive politicians for things that they already know they've wanted to carry out for decades. The people controlling them, that is. And they want you to believe that things will change if you just get this person in. If we just make sure that the Republicans hold control. It's what they want you to continue thinking. And they're going to continue carrying out the same things. All the talk about Khashoggi, all the talk about ceasefire. They're doing what they've always wanted to do. They've always planned to do. Whether that be in Syria, focusing on Iran, in Yemen. Your decisions, your voting has no effect on what they're actually trying to do. The only thing that would actually change something is if enough Americans collectively spoke out and showed the world that we do not support what they're carrying out. But that would require independence of the two-party deception, which is what I'm trying to focus on. Moving on to the last story related to this last one we just talked about, an extension of the very same story showing you that now that after they're continuing to bomb these ports and civilian areas and hospitals and universities and all the things they're doing, now civilians are trapped after the Saudi airstrike and warships pound the city of Hodeida, apparently in the midst of ceasefires and peace talks. Civilians now trapped, which is bad, which is, you know, civilians dying on a regular basis, you'd think would be enough. But maybe the fact that all these civilians are currently trapped and about to die, maybe that'll grab someone's attention. But this is continuing, and they know that they're trapped, and that will not stop them from firing. Saudi airstrikes and warships now are, right this moment, continue to pound the city of Hodeida. And today and yesterday, with escalating strikes coinciding, of course, with U.S.-Saudi-backed ground forces, this 30,000 that the U.S. and Saudis just sent back in, of course, in the midst of peace talks, are advancing closer to the city, just 3 miles from the port itself. This is according to officials. Do you think this talk of ceasefire and peace talks was a cover to carry out a massive offensive on Hodeida and take it from them? Probably, because that's what they're doing. This further limits the movement of aid into and out of this vital port, which before the Saudi offensive was the lone source of food imports for over 80% of Yemen. And they know this. So shutting off that port is starving these people to death, and they know that. Saudi forces control the supply lines, and promises of an aid corridor haven't panned out so far. Of course, the point being that they claim, oh, well, we're blocking this port to make sure shipments of weapons don't get into the Houthi rebels, but we'll make sure that support and food and medicine gets through, which it doesn't. And they've proven that. So that's just another blatant lie to throw at the press and the average people that don't know any better. Now, heavy fighting and U.S.-backed Saudi encroachment into the area has aid groups warning, again, that thousands of civilians left in this area are effectively trapped right this moment. Now, everyone who lives between the airport and the university is effectively trapped inside these areas, and the fighting has almost reached the city's main hospital, increasing the humanitarian crisis. The UN has, of course, reiterated calls for urgent peace talks to prevent the fall of the city, and the famine threatening millions of lives that's expected to follow. The U.S. called for, of course, an immediate ceasefire last week, and there's no sign that the Saudi offensive is slowing whatsoever, because they never planned to. As the U.S. is intricately involved, they sent the troops in, they know what they're doing, and they're blinding you with talks of elections and fake gestures of peace talks and doing everything they've continued to do. And the real point of all this today, everything we're talking about, this is all being covered up by this obsessive coverage of a broken ritual. If everything worked the way it should, of course, voting is one of the most important things we can participate in. But if that system is corrupted to the point to where they no longer allow your vote to matter, the ritual's broken. It no longer matters. So please take a look at my video from yesterday and at least just take a moment and stand back and ask yourself, if it's broken, which it's easy to demonstrate that it is, what will your vote change? What else can we do? They want you to think that the only thing you as an American can do is get up every 4 years, every 2 years and vote. Now, if that doesn't leave you with a helpless feeling, I don't know what will. That's the only thing we can do? That's the only thing Americans have to actually affect change in this crazy, broken, corrupt system is to wake up one day and check a box? That's what they want you to think. That's the only thing you can do. The truth is that's one of a thousand things that you can do, and probably one of the least effective today to actually change things. And if you want some solutions, check out my show from yesterday that I break down many different ways that you can actually change things and actually be politically active while abstaining from the broken system, which is in fact a quintessential part of American voting that they've lied to you about. So just think about all that and make sure and keep track of everything else going on in the world that they are ignoring while they force this down your throat. So I will leave you a video today of the time that Clint testified in front of the Supreme Court saying, yeah, they paid me to manipulate the machines in hopes that we'll reach just one more person today. But as always, question everything. Come to your own conclusions. Stay vigilant.
Mr. Curtis, would you please state your full name for the record?
My name is Clinton Eugene Curtis.
And where do you reside?
Tallahassee, Florida.
And what is your profession?
I'm a computer programmer.
Would you please speak into the microphone so the audience can hear your testimony?
I'm a computer programmer.
Mr. Curtis, are there programs that can be used to secretly fix elections?
Yes.
How do you know that to be the case?
Because in October of 2000, I wrote a prototype for President Congressman Tom Feeney at the company I work for in Oviedo, Florida, that did just that.
And when you say did just that, it would rig an election?
It would flip the vote 51-49 to whoever you wanted it to go to and whichever race you wanted to win.
And would that program that you designed be something that elections officials that might be on county boards of elections could detect?
They'd never see it.
Mr. Would you answer that question once again?
They would never see it.
So how would such a program, a secret program that fixes the election, how could it be detected?
You would have to view it either in the source code, or you'd have to have a receipt and then count the hard paper against the actual vote total. Other than that, you won't see it.
All right, Mr. Curtis, if you had been asked, you or others with your professional expertise had been asked to design a protective program that would protect the Ohio elections from against such software to fix the election, could you have done so?
If we've been asked to make a program that could fix the election, sure, anybody can do it.
No, could you have designed a program or a procedure or a protocol that would have protected Ohio against this kind of rigging?
No, you have to look at the source code. You have to get probably programmers from both or all parties to look at the source code and determine if there's anything in there that shouldn't be there. I mean, it's a simple program. You're adding one to a person's total. It's 100 lines of code tops.
All right. Are you aware of whether there was any protective action in Ohio against this kind of vote rigging through software?
I don't know.
You don't know?
I don't know.
You were not asked to assist in the development of any protective system. Is that correct?
No, I was not.
Given the availability of such vote rigging software and the testimony that has been given under oath of substantial statistical anomalies and gross differences between exit polling data and the actual tabulated results, do you have an opinion whether or not the Ohio election, presidential election, was hacked?
Yes, I would say it was. I mean, if you have exit polling data that is significantly off from the vote, then it's probably hacked.
And your testimony is under oath?
Yes, sir.
And the testimony you've given is true?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. Congressman.
You say he was the lobbyist for the voting machine company at the same time he was Speaker of the House?
I don't know what the voting machine company is. He was a lobbyist for Gang Enterprises.